all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense for this snowy Thursday, February 23rd. It is still another beautiful day on Lake Wissota. It's just that I can't really see it through all the blowing snow and everything else that's out there. Well, I take that back. There's nothing else out there but blowing snow. I don't see any traffic. I don't see anything. And that's the way that it should be because nobody needs to rescue your sorry butt from a ditch. So if you're inside listening on the radio or watching us on Facebook or Twitter, we appreciate it very much. Coming up this morning, Gen Z to the rescue again. Young adults turned out in a big way for Tuesday's state Supreme Court primary. We will talk to Joe Zepecki about whether Judge Janet Protasiewicz can maintain that momentum through April's general election. And we'll talk about the issues in the race that are motivating some of those younger voters. Then we'll go from Gen Z to Gen Alpha, the one following them. And it's part of this week's Hometown Health segment. Dr. Kristen Lyerly and her guests discuss a new clinic in Brown County that will put a special emphasis on adolescent health, given the many challenges of teens and preteens that they're already facing. We will check in with weatherology meteorologist Jennifer Vachitsky about the snowstorm that is on its trek across Wisconsin. We'll have Luke Mathers in the Civic Media homeroom near the end of the program. And of course, your calls as well. Of course, to do that, I got to turn the phones on. So here, let me do that right now while I get set to say hello to one Aaron Zommers, who's standing by at our studios in Madison. Mr. Zommers, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Just a quick reminder here that if you want to reach us, the phones here are 844-967-2789 or 715-388-7155. And our email address, radio@upnorthnewswi.com. So down there, I'm going to pull up a live map from the National Weather Service and look at snow totals. What are things like down there?
Well, it's not really actively snowing, but the roads suck.
There's your official report, ladies and gentlemen. The roads suck. Because the map that I'm looking at is through the National Weather Service office in the Twin Cities. And so I see things like maybe 4 inches, you know, north of Madison. But it looks like the higher amounts are scattered in parts of central and western Wisconsin. For example, there's 10 inches reported at Aliva, that's south of Eau Claire. Let's see, which one are you? Neillsville reporting 11 inches, 8.5 at Hatfield. There's 8 inches in Warrens. Otherwise, a lot of other reports are anywhere from 2 to 6 inches. And obviously, that's making the roads, how did you put it? They suck, right?
They sure do.
So again, please do take good care out there, and we'll check in with weatherology coming up in our next hour to get an update on, you know, when all this is going to stop falling, and then what the weather's going to look like after that as we head back into winter here. Let's see. We have been asking, and I'm still looking for good answers to, if Wisconsin had a state aroma, what would it be? Anything from tailgating to pine trees to farms to you name it. So we'd love to get your thoughts on that as well. And also that reminder that if you miss a show and want to catch it later, maybe there's a guest that you want to see, you can catch us on civicmedia.us. That is the website where you can find out where all the Civic Media radio stations are, where all the shows are, when they air, and then catch them as a podcast. You can even subscribe as a podcast and listen back, and we'd appreciate that very much. Quick little sports notes here at 10 past 6 in the morning. The 10th-ranked Marquette men's basketball team will host DePaul on Saturday night with only 3 games left in the regular season. The Badger men's basketball team, meanwhile, beat Iowa last night 64-52. That brings them up to 8-9 in the Big Ten Conference, and they will play at Michigan on Sunday. I was looking for any kind of an update on Giannis Antetokounmpo and his wrist that he injured right before the All-Star break, and I'm not seeing anything at first blush, which again isn't necessarily a bad thing, just giving it rest and hoping to be ready when the season resumes tomorrow night in Milwaukee as the Bucks take on the Miami Heat. And I will wait till after the break to do one more little sports story. It's about the LIV golf tournament, or as I refer to it, the Al-Qaeda tour of golf, because it's something that's sponsored by the murderous Saudi regime, and is a heck of a way to spend the blood money that they have. And I think that it's basically the golfers without a soul who would take up the Saudis on joining this kind of a tour. Well, it appears to not be going well, and I'm going to share some of the remarks from legendary sports columnist Sally Jenkins coming up in just a minute. But first, an attaboy for all of you, and attagirl, as the case may be. The turnout for the Supreme Court primary around the state was north of 20%. The State Elections Commission announced yesterday that there were a total of at least 960,477 ballots cast. So not too far away from a million voters. That was 20.5% of the total voting age population, which is about 4.6 million people across the state. And so that's the highest number in spring primaries in quite some time. So good work there. We'll talk more about some of the headlines in the news coming up in just a bit. This is Up North News Radio for a Thursday. We are truly kicking it old school with the bumper music here, Aaron. You of course have no memory of that. It was well before you were born, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Nothing there. That is because I, being somebody that is, you know, borderline addicted to TV history and nostalgia, stumbled upon a website dedicated to network news themes of old. Going way back. And that one there was actually one of my favorite ones. It was the opening theme for the CBS Morning News from 1982 to 1984 with Bill Curtis and Phyllis George. Yeah, I know, nerd alert. But I thought about it because as I found this website and thought, do they really have all these different things? And yeah, they do. This person has managed to collect all manner of tunes. And let's see, there is, what do we have next year? Is this the NBC Nightly News theme from the early 1970s? Let's, again, people of a certain age are going to hear this and go, wait, is John Chancellor and David Brinkley about to come on? Yes, that was an actual network news theme. Nothing like the John Williams orchestral happenings now, you know, major suites of music. It was a lot like, it was a simpler time. And in fact, while we're on NBC, let me play one more. This is the Today Show theme from the late 1970s. Uh-oh. Maybe it's not there yet. That's okay.
The computer's thinking. I'll refresh it.
Okay, that's no worry. You just bring it up anytime when it's there. So where did we end up finding it? I should at least tell people so that they could listen to it. It is a site called, it's got a very generic name. Oh, there it
Network
is.
NetworkNewsMusic.com.
NetworkNewsMusic.com. And you don't have to go as far back as I did, but I mean, you could go even further back when the NBC Nightly News, the Huntley Brinkley Report, their theme song, their opening theme, was Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, which they still will use from time to time, especially on MSNBC. And Keith Olbermann, when he was there, used that as his opening theme. I think he still does on his podcast now that he has. So anyway, there's our little bit of an early music break, as it were, just to kind of break things up today as we head into the day. All right. I mentioned that Sally Jenkins, the sports columnist from the Washington Post, is starting to, I don't know if the right phrase would be to tap dance on the grave of the LIV Tour. But I think worth mentioning, we'll get back to state news in just a second, but I have wanted, since we started the show in August, wanted to find an excuse to let people know that while the regime in Saudi Arabia did try to start this competing golf tour, that I thought it was downright ghoulish that any professional golfers would agree to be part of this. And while it did have some big name player signings, you know, in the beginning, it has not really picked up a lot of momentum. And now, as Sally Jenkins writes in the Washington Post, the airborne toxic event called LIV Golf is slowly dissipating, and soon all that will be left is the mere faint scent of its portable toilets. The failures are piling up so fast that the PGA Tour might not even need lawyers to beat LIV. It's going to beat itself with its own sour-smelling hustle, its jinx on the links for clinks, gutter golf. The news value of its debut last year was championed with patent unease by Phil Mickelson, and it has long faded, Sally Jenkins writes. What's left is the militant fruitcakery of Greg Norman, whose utterances never quite form into actual substance. To hear Norman tell it LIV 2023 was going to have this momentous TV deal and some more big PGA defections, and instead, as the second season opens this week in Mexico, it ends up with a laughably desperate TV pact with the CW Network, the channel that brings you World's Funniest Animals. And she goes on just to write about how this was supposed to be a duel for the soul of the game, but what it's really come down to is, with very few exceptions, this LIV Golf Tour has turned out to be just a place where people go for the money as they sense they have moved past their prime and can't be competitive anymore. And the reason more people are seeing this, she writes, is because of this new Netflix golf docuseries called Full Swing, which, again, I'll tell you, I have not watched, but I know is getting some big numbers. A lot of people loving the way that the cameras were being allowed to follow all these professional golfers, very revealing interviews. And in there, that included Bruce Koepka, who was one of the big-name defections, but who in the docuseries talks quite candidly about how he has lost his edge physically and mentally. He's lost his confidence. He's hearing voices in his head that he can't do it anymore. And it's clear that that's becoming the case with other golfers who have, jumped over to this Saudi tour, or again, the Al-Qaeda tour, as I prefer to name it. And so Jenkins concludes, from the outset, LIV was a home for buttercup-bellied moral cowards clutching at cash from a murderous regime. But it quickly has evolved into a refuge for guys who have lost their taste for competition. And again, you can read more of that over at the Washington Post. Getting back to news closer to home here, let's see, we have some mayor's races that we're going to talk about, and the 8th State Senate District special election that we will be talking about as well, especially in, the weeks ahead heading toward April 4th. But we also have a legislature that is supposed to be working on a state budget. We have had the governor's budget address. We should be getting, the finance committee and the legislature. It's a very powerful committee. Get them to start mulling over things. And so we noted a post yesterday from Republican State Senator Dewey Strobel. And it is the picture that we were all waiting for. It's the stack of papers, as if the size of a stack of papers determines the moral quality of a budget. What he's got is the plan from Governor Evers, which comes out to 1,815 pages. So it looks to be a stack about 4 inches high. And that's par for the course for a state budget. Then he has next to it the mere 412 pages that form the base budget that the legislature will start from. But then, of course, the final product will be closer to the 1,800 pages that comes from Governor Evers, because that's that's what a finished product is going to look like when it's all said and done. But Senator Strobel's trying to make some kind of a comparison that more pages equals more wasteful spending. Well, I certainly didn't see it that way. And so my response to it that I posted on social media was, here's what I see in the photograph. That's a photograph of work. On one side is someone who does the work, which would be Governor Evers. On the other side is the paltry outcome of those who do as little work as possible on behalf of Wisconsin. And it's very possible that the last page in that small stack announces the start of another long taxpayer-funded vacation for the Republicans leading the state legislature. Now, again, they have a chance to redeem themselves. We're going to talk to Joe Zepecki in our next segment here. We're going to focus primarily on the state Supreme Court race, but we have in the past talked about, you know, what happens in the legislature, how they decide what your taxes are going to be and what's the spending levels going to be like for your schools, your roads and such. And there has been a bit of a round of cautious optimism that things are going to get worked out in the end. But before we get there, we have to tolerate posts like that one yesterday that somehow compared the size of a stack of papers with the actual contents of what these legislators are entrusted by us to write. And if they can't pull it off, then I guess they're just not up to the job. But they're the only legislature we've got, so we're going to have to watch what they do in the coming weeks. Mentioned a couple of mayor's races as we look at other results from Tuesday in Green Bay. Mayor Eric Genrich and Brown County Administration Director Chad Wanninger were the top vote getters in Tuesday's primary. A note in the Green Bay Press Gazette says that they outpolled the other challengers rather handily to move on to April 4th. Both Genrich and Wanninger are similar in that they both have careers in public service. Each represented the Green Bay area in the state assembly for three terms. Both earned bachelor's and master's degrees from colleges in Wisconsin. And so there's going to be what appears to be a very spirited campaign for mayor in Green Bay. The same will be true in Madison, where there will be a mayor's race as well. The current mayor, Satya Rhodes Conway, advanced in the race along with Gloria Rise. They emerged from a field of competitors, and they will face off come April 4th. And then, of course, there will be school board elections aplenty across Wisconsin in the coming days. The campaign will go on in the coming days. The voting will take place on April 4th. And as I noted on Tuesday, you know, we've said very little about the races to this point, but the rhetoric's going to heat up. It's going to heat up from this AstroTurf group called Moms for Liberty and from others who are going to be talking about parental rights, which is right up there with states' rights and, you know, religious liberty and all that, which is just code for, you know, my way is the best way. My way is the normal way and not yours, rather than actually working together to be inclusive, working together to get the best education possible for our kids, not the lowest possible tax rate for the wealthiest taxpayers in a community. If we're going to have a school board serving, let's have them serve the education needs first and not this whole mentality of, you know, running government like a business, because that was never right. It was never designed to work that way. And so hopefully as we move along, we can continue to remind people to elect school board members that actually put education first. There was a terrible shooting in Orange County, Florida yesterday that included the shootings of a TV reporter and photographer, and one of them dying along with a woman and a 9-year-old girl from a shooter who first murdered the woman, went away, came back, and started shooting again, killing the child and again killing the shooting the TV crew and killing at least one of them. It was one of a few mass shootings that we've already had this week in America. And I bring it up simply to say, what's happening in Congress? Well, an Alabama congressman has introduced a bill that would make the AR-15, it would designate it as the National Gun of America. And he's the one that's been handing out AR-15 shaped lapel pins for certain members of Congress to wear. And that's what your Congress is doing this week as more people are dying in mass shootings. Let's take a break. We'll cover some more news, Kristen Lyerly, and music history coming up later in the hour, along with Hometown Health and our 7 o'clock hour. All after this, you're up north. Thursday morning here on Up North News Radio, and we're joined now by Joe Zepecki to talk about this week's election, and then the one that follows, not too far away, on April 4th. Joe, good morning.
Hello, hello.
I don't sense there were any surprises on your part from the results that came in. Not just that Janet Protasiewicz was the top vote getter, but also that Daniel Kelly finished ahead of Jennifer Doro.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised by those outcomes or the order of the three candidates, or sorry, the four candidates that they finished in. If I was surprised by anything, the one thing I might point to is overall turnout. So pleasantly surprised by the record number of Wisconsinites who cast a ballot. I'm going to say that it's the power of Up North News.
Sure.
I recall that last week we talked about the fact that you never have more power than in voting in a spring primary in the dead of winter in February. So thank you, Up North News. Thank you, listeners, for heeding our advice and getting out there and doing your civic duty.
They took your words to heart, nearly a million strong. It was just unreal, especially from the reports I'm seeing of young adults, college campuses, things like that. As somebody said, Gen Z to the rescue yet again. And, you know, I have my feelings on where my generation has fallen short. And thank goodness for what I get to lovingly call the youngins.
Yeah, well, listen, I'm thinking a lot about the generations right now. I'm enjoying and speed reading through The Aftermath by Philip Bump of the Washington Post. The subhead of that book is The Last Days of the Baby Boom and the Future of Power in America. The kids are all right. They voted a higher percentage than the baby boomers did even when they were young people. So the millennials, Gen Z, the kids are all right. They may save us yet.
I'll come back to that, but if you will allow me a tangent, Kathleen Madigan is one of my favorite comedians, and she dropped a new special on Prime Video this week. So, of course, we watched it Tuesday night while waiting for election returns to come in. And she goes on a riff about that, about how we keep replacing 80-year-olds with, 75-year-olds. And is that ever going to stop? And she's very bipartisan in the way that she does it. And, she's my age. She's in her late 50s. And we definitely see that gap where I see people now in their mid-30s and saying, here you go. You guys go ahead, and you voters in your 20s, you go ahead and get this done, because you're definitely showing more enthusiasm and progressivism than, folks of a certain age. And it's refreshing, actually.
Yeah. And one of the theses in this book by Philip Bump of the Washington Post is that once you're 30, there's still some drift in our politics, right? But when you're looking at the broad strokes, generational, size shifts in politics, the really important years are age 14 to 24. And so when you look at what millennials and Gen Z lived through in those formative years, it should not surprise anyone that the youngest parts of the electorate are more progressive. And that bodes very, very well, because at some point, the baby boom generation is going to fall off a cliff. It's great that people are living longer. We want baby boomers around as long as possible. But at some point, that demographic reality is going to become the reality, and it will impact our politics.
So again, with those younger voters turning out strong as they did in February, they clearly knew that there were high stakes involved, that we could have wound up with two conservatives on the April ballot, while unlikely, still a possibility. So now we have to ask from the opposite end, the complacency question, and whether Judge Protasiewicz's numbers will lead to that complacency. And look, I'll answer my own question first. I can't see how it is as long as the Dobbs decision is out there. I think every election is going to be like this for a while, but I'll ask you anyway, if you think complacency is a concern.
Not right now. And you are exactly right. You hit on it. There was a sea change in our politics last year. It was about a year ago this time when there was the leak that, you know, it looks like the Supreme Court is going to overturn Roe. That was followed up, you know, of course, in the summer with Roe going down in the Dobbs decision. And what we saw as a result of that was young people, women voters, what I refer to as Dobbs dads, really throughout the entire electorate, people got pissed off, fired up, and wanted to do something. They knew that their power to do something was their vote. And it was one of the main reasons that Democrats overperformed in a midterm that should have been, you know, by every other indicator, a Republican tsunami. The voters had something to say because they were outraged at what the high court did and the rights and freedoms that it took away from women in this country. So if that was true in November, the question for political prognosticators and people looking at elections today is, well, what has changed? And the answer is nothing, because of the Republican control of the House. There has been no federal legislation. President Biden would sign that. You know, Senate Democrats would support that. House Democrats would support that. But as long as Speaker Kevin McCarthy holds the gavel, it's not going to happen. Here in Wisconsin, Republicans refused to come to the table when Governor Evers called them into special session and said, we need to update this draconian 1849 law that does not even allow for exceptions for rape or incest. And voters are smarter than I think a lot of people sometimes give them credit for. They see what's at stake. They see what's going on here. And they know that the same thing they were outraged about when they went to vote in October and November of last year is still a hot button issue today. And that whoever fills this next seat on the state Supreme Court for 10 years could very well be what it comes down to in terms of whether or not Wisconsin women can access reproductive health care.
And yet, as we head into the general election campaign, while we have often talked about the two big issues of women's healthcare rights and then democracy itself, gerrymandering, voting, things like that, I have the sneaky suspicion that between Dick Ehlein's money and other things, it's going to be 6 weeks of ads about, you know, welfare cheats and other distractions, if you will, because there's, in my mind, no other way to put it. It worked in November for Ron Johnson to have those distractions about, you know, Mandela Barnes wanted to open up the prisons and set everybody loose. And so we always go into a campaign thinking it's going to be issues one and two, but they end up being three and four because of these other things that come up. Do you think that the fake referendum about, you know, requiring people to work for welfare benefits, which is already state law, but do you feel like that is going to gin up conservative voter turnout?
I don't. As I just said, I think voters are smarter than that. I think they see through these very transparent, hypocritical attempts by Republicans. I mean, keep in mind, these are conservatives and Republicans who were destroying Mandela Barnes for his position on cash bail. And now they have adopted Mandela Barnes's position on cash bail and put that referendum on the ballot as well. So for Republicans, for conservatives, it way too often looks like it is about power as opposed to about people. That's like as simple as I can break it down for folks. And part of that is the role of money in our politics. And so there are deep-pocketed special interests who want to see the conservative stranglehold on our state laws and policies continue. And the good news is, I think a lot of people have woken up to that, and they know that the only way to fight back against the outsized influence of money is with people power. And so I'm confident that this will be a fair fight, or at least a fairer fight than Johnson versus Barnes was in 2022. And that at the end of the day is really, as the more I think about that Senate race, what it comes down to is more than even the words that were said and the messages that were carried, it was the weight of the messages, the fact that Ron Johnson had $25 million more to take apart Mandela Barnes and build a perception of him that was not true. That is why Mandela came up just short. I think this is going to be a much fairer fight than that, and that's advantage Judge Janet Protasiewicz.
I would think in my way of looking at things, which is through very much a nerd lens, that former Justice Kelly's work on behalf of the state and national Republican parties, which included discussions about the fake electors, including him getting paid for this work, it's not like he was a volunteer, would also be something that is elevated and is a deciding point for a lot of voters. But then I'm always reminded that, you know, there are things that matter more on people's kitchen table, things that matter more with, you know, body autonomy and things like that. But I still feel like I've got to bring it up because, again, the man was a paid legal counselor for the Republican Party talking about fake electors. Maybe that's something consultants will tell Janet Protasiewicz not to talk about. I just don't see how you don't at least remind voters of that.
Well, let's add the other layer to it, which is that former Justice Kelly also then has the temerity to be out here questioning how central Judge Janet's politics and her values are to her, when as recently as December, that would be, let me check my calendar, 2 months ago, was getting paid up to $120,000 by the Republican Party of Wisconsin for his efforts to help them overturn the results of the 2020 election. So it is bad enough that when they needed a lawyer to advise them on this treasonous plot, that he was who they called and he answered and billed the hours. It is worse that he thinks that that should be absolved. But how dare Judge Janet explain her values to people who want to vote for her? It again goes back to what I said earlier, which is I think this is ultimately about power for them. They want to be in charge and they are willing to say or do whatever it takes to get there. And the people of Wisconsin have said enough of that. Whether it's with the maps, whether it's with the money in politics, they're sick and tired of it. And what they see in Judge Janet is somebody who has the qualifications, who has the experience, and who, although she has her values and is not going to express them, is not going to put her finger on the scale for the powerful special interests who are why this state is so often struggling to keep pace with our neighbors.
Last question, looking backwards before we look ahead to April, you know, after this week, but looking back at Waukesha County Judge Jennifer Doro's performance and her inability to get north of 15% in more than two dozen counties, what does that say, especially to the chattering class, myself included, who thought that all of her national exposure in the Waukesha Parade trial was going to elevate her, along with fatigue from Dan Kelly losing previously? Did she do something wrong or did Dan Kelly do something right?
Well, I don't think she ran a particularly strong campaign. You know, just from the targeting to the messaging, look at me, look at this role I played in this one case, while a tragic case, while an important, you know, deliverance of justice for the families who lost people in that parade, there has to be more to it. You have to show that you know the issues and that there's a reason that you're doing this beyond I'm a celebrity. And so I think there was a little bit of that. We're in what I would now call a backlash to the celebritification of our politics, which I think we can attribute to Donald Trump. I also think the reality that many of us have to grapple with is people don't consume news and information about what's going on in the world in the way that they used to. You and I know this. We've talked about it. We've thought about it. It's why you know, things like the Civic Media Radio Network are so important, because people are changing how they're getting their information. But if you kind of draw the concentric circles out from Waukesha, the further you got from Waukesha, the less well Judge Doro did. And to me, that suggests that they spent way too much time in their backyard and not enough time trying to build a statewide coalition, which clearly former Justice Kelly had prioritized for a very long period of time, and that paid off for him.
Joe Zepecki, he's had more coffee than you or whatever he does, because he can say celebritification and the rest of us cannot. Well done. Joe, thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
You too. Talk soon.
There's Joe Zepecki. We always appreciate our visits with him on Thursday mornings. We always talk about the afternoon before because it takes a special person to get up this early in the morning and be a guest on the radio. Oh, wait, Kristen Lierley is one of them, and she will be along in just a second. We'll talk about this day in history. We'll go over some music history for this day. Then we'll preview her hometown health segment, which is about adolescent health and a new clinic that's going up in Brown County to help that population get the information they need to get started on a healthy foot when they start to enter adulthood. That and much more coming up after this. This is Up North News Radio. So here's the question. Can you tell that that's Jody Watley or is that Kristen Lierley? I don't know.
Yeah, in my head. Yes.
Dr. Lierley, how are you?
Oh, so good. I love a good snow day, Pat.
Oh, it's definitely that. You said you didn't get quite too much out there in Green Bay, at least not yet.
Yeah, it looks like about a foot. They haven't come through with the plow yet.
Oh, well, I mean, look, a foot is nothing to, you know, shake your head at here. We're somewhere in that 7 to 12 inch range here. I don't know. It's once it gets light out, I'll know for sure. But you said the deer are frolicking already out there in it?
Yeah, there were a couple deer who slept in my backyard last night, and I'm really looking forward to getting the kids out with shovels today. I think that's going to be a really fun thing to do.
Fyed, that's all it is. It's just, you know. Other historical notes today. George Handel, the German-British composer whose music paved the way for Mozart and Beethoven, born on this day in 1685. The Rotary Club, happy birthday to them. Chicago attorney Paul Harris and three others met for lunch on this day in 1905 to form the world's first service club. I have been a member of two different Rotary clubs in two different countries and love the work that they do and hope to get involved in there again at some point. 1945, the Battle of Iwo Jima in World War II led to the cherished national heirloom of a photograph of Marines putting a flag up on top of that island. Also, this is the day in 1778 when Baron von Steuben of Prussia arrived at Valley Forge, Pennsylvania to help General Washington's Continental Army, a ragtag bunch that needed discipline, training, and encouragement. And in fact, we have, Kristen, I had to dig around for this, but we have some very rare audio of Baron von Steuben's remarks upon arriving at Valley Forge. Aaron, can you play that clip, please?
All we have to do is to be the great American fighting soldier that is inside each one of us. Now do what I do and say what I say and make me proud. Fall in?
Yeah! The Library of Congress does not make that clip available to many folks, but...
Do you file that under ragtag bunch?
Yes. A motley crew, if you will. Let's see. I've got one more musical. Well, I got a couple of musical notes, but let me tell you about this one first. Prepare yourselves. Buckle in. Pat Kreitlow is about to blow your mind. Happy birthday to Skylar Gray. She's 37 years old today. The pride of Mazomanie, Wisconsin. In 2010, Skylar co-wrote Eminem and Rihanna's hit single, Love the Way You Lie. She's been the guest vocalist on several hit singles like Diddy's Coming Home, Dr. Dre's I Need a Doctor, Nicki Minaj's Bed of Lies, Macklemore's Glorious. She has written songs for Kehlani, Alicia Keys, Christina Aguilera, Nick Jonas, Celine Dion. Skylar Gray, that's not her birth name. She got her start as part of a singing duo as a little girl with her mom. Her mom, Candace Kreitlow. Skylar Gray is a cousin. I've never met her. It's a kind of a second cousin thing. But when I was doing genealogy, many, many years ago and found out that, this Candace Kreitlow and her daughter, Holly Brooke, was her name back then, were doing songs together. And then, she went out to, I think, to Hollywood or wherever to try to make a name for herself. And boy, has she ever.
Boy, she should have stuck with Kreitlow.
Yeah, it really just falls right off the tongue there, you know, when you're trying to make a name for yourself. So happy birthday, cuz.
Dynasty in Wisconsin.
37 years old today. And speaking of Eminem, this is the anniversary of him dropping his first major label album, the Slim Shady LP, in 1997.
Mr. There you Mathers? Go. So,
what's that?
Marshall Mathers or Luke Mathers?
Hey, more cousins. That could be it.
We have a theme right now.
Oh, my goodness. I should take off that commercial break slide. There we go. Hey, you were a busy one this week. Not just all the bike rides that you took while the weather was still nice, but you were checking out punchkies. You were checking out cheese contests. You're all over the place.
We were everywhere on Tuesday. There was so much happening. Well, first of all, it was Fat Tuesday. So it's an obligation if you're within, you know, spitting distance from Pulaski that you have to get up to Pulaski and get yourself a punchki. Mm-hmm. And it took me a little while. It still does to practice how to actually say it because it looks so different than the way you spell it. But punchki.
Punchki.
At Smetava's Bakery. I mean, the line was out the door. There were people everywhere, so happy, so excited, and the punchkis were amazing.
If I'd have known you were going to stumble again on the bakery name, I would have re-racked that video clip you sent us, the outtake of you trying to pronounce it.
Oh, it was so funny. It's hard, but, you know, I tried.
I know. So from punchkis to the U.S. Cheese Championships.
Yeah, that was happening at the Rush Center. That was very interesting. It wasn't a big tourist kind of attraction. It was really a serious cheese judging contest. And the judges were at the periphery. There are these giant blocks of cheese in the middle. And we just walked around and asked them questions and they offered us cheese samples. It was really a neat experience. A woman was judging curds. And one of the criteria is squeakiness. I'll have you know.
Of course.
Yeah, she came over and she took our picture. I mean, we just had so much fun. Highly recommended. The Worlds are in Madison next year.
Yes, the Worlds are held in Madison, and this was the U.S. Championship. And we would review some of the winners, but I mean, there are so many categories here of cheese. And then there's, you know, a top three in every one of them. I mean, honestly, just to scroll through all the various types of something. So you've got all these cheesemakers who are entering, so many great ones in Wisconsin. I mean, you almost feel like you can't go wrong if you go over to uschampioncheese.org and look through the results. You're going to find a place near you that you probably haven't tried yet and go try their stuff.
I don't want to brag, but Wisconsin did take home almost all of the prizes.
Go figure.
Including one of your favorites. Marika, I'm going to say that name
right. Marieka Gouda. Yeah.
Marieka Gouda out of Thorpe. Yeah. Their Gouda is just unbelievable.
Wow. Okay. One more quick thing here. Also in your neck of the woods, give big Green Bay. The results are in. $2.5 million donated to 45 different organizations from more than 3,800 donors, all part of a partnership between the Greater Green Bay Community Foundation and the Packers Foundation. They selected 45 nonprofits this year from a pool of 144 applicants. And really, Kristen, a great time for the community to really come together.
Yeah, come together because we've got this team that the community cares so much about and the team cares about the community. It's a beautiful event.
Sounds good. And then coming up in about a half hour or so for Hometown Health, we're going to be hearing about a new adolescent clinic in Brown County. You don't mind sticking around between now and then, I hope.
Oh, no.
All right. Well, go fill that coffee cup. We're going to take a little news break here, and then we'll come back and talk more about stories happening around Wisconsin. Then Hometown Health coming up at the bottom of the hour here on Up North News Radio for a Thursday.